Hello, and welcome to Dragonfly. I am your host, Rebecca Hoffman. Join us at Dragonfly and explore stories, how stories work, and what keeps us listening. Today, we take a look at what spurs the story forward, known as the inciting event, and how it works in several well-known stories. Then we will visit that peerless Pacific Northwest community where time is not even a concept, Cape Couve. You are listening to KXRW 99.9 FM. This is Dragonfly.
A big thank you to our founding partners at Morel Inc. Print and Marketing for their ongoing support of community radio. Morel Inc. is a woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop that since 1993 has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative printing and marketing solutions. Morel Inc.'s experienced staff creates partnerships with their clients and uses the latest technologies to meet their needs. More information about which of Morel Inc.'s products, printing, and marketing strategies will best serve your next project and budget can be found at morelinc.com. That's morelinc.com.
Welcome back to Dragonfly. In this segment, Storytime, we explore an element of storytelling and why it works. Today, we delve into the inciting event. The inciting event is that moment when our protagonist is called to begin their journey. It is important to us listeners because when it occurs, we care what the hero chooses. We are invested in following their journey. The inciting event is usually not the first thing we learn about our characters. First, we meet them, get an idea of their needs and wants, and then something happens or someone appears, and now the character must make a choice. It's a point of no return.
Six, seven, eight.
In Chicago, we meet Roxy Hart, witnessing the glamour of theater and learn of her desire to become a showgirl. But her witnessing Velma Kelly's arrest is not the inciting event. We learn what Roxy wants and how much she wants it. We witness her trying to get it, at first by having an affair with a man who promises to introduce her to powerful friends that can make her a star. Except, he's lying.
What's the idea?
Wake up, kiddo. You ain't never gonna have an act.
Says who?
Face it, Lexi. You're a two-bit talent with skinny legs. Well, I'm just a furniture salesman.
Yeah, but you got connections, you know? The guy down at the club.
There is no guy.
Yep, that night.
It was the first time I set foot in that joint. I was collecting on a bet from the trombone player.
So you never told anyone about me?
Sugar, you were hot stuff. I would have said anything to get a piece of that.
And now?
We had some laughs. Let's just leave it at that.
Fred, you can't do this to me.
You can't? Oh! You touch me again, I'll put your lights out.
Wait.
Your husband will be home soon. Why don't you wash yourself before you go hitting those sheets again?
You liar, Fred.
Oh, yeah, so what?
You lied to me. You lied to me.
That's life, sweetheart. That's life.
You're a son of a bitch. You're a son of a bitch.
This is the point of no return. She has made a choice that leads away from her current world to, well, jail, and starts a series of events that may or may not lead to her goal of stardom. But there's no going back. Let's examine the inciting event. Interestingly, it is not the moment in these stories that are the peak action or conflict. In fact, sometimes inciting events can be subtle or even seem ordinary. Another way to describe the inciting event is the call to adventure, not the moment when the main character commits himself to the call. It is the call itself which initiates the cascade of events that leads to that protagonist's decision. Such is the moment in Star Wars. We meet our protagonist, Luke Skywalker, who is itching for adventure. While attending to his chores, he meets Obi-Wan Kenobi and learns of the Force. But this is not the call. Neither is the discovery of his adoptive parents' murder which galvanizes him to act. The inciting event is the call he needs to take action.
Now, let's see if we can't figure out what you are, my little friend. And where you come from.
I saw part of the message.
I seem to have found it.
General Kenobi, years ago you served my father in the Clone Wars. Now he begs you to help him in his struggle against the Empire. I regret that I am unable to present my father's request to you in person, but my ship has fallen under attack, and I'm afraid my mission to bring you to Alderaan has failed. I have placed information vital to the survival of the rebellion into the memory systems of this R2 unit. My father will know how to retrieve it. You must see this droid safely delivered to him on Alderaan. This is our most desperate hour. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
All that has gone before has led us to care about Luke. And now, with that in place, the call to adventure is made. At this moment, Luke hears of the plight of the Rebel Alliance and their leader, Princess Leia. When he returns to find his adoptive parents murdered, he is ready to take action. The inciting event is the call, so that when the moment comes, he can act. Inciting events are usually placed many scenes into a story, after seeds are planted, and we've become invested in the protagonist's journey, too. Sometimes inciting events are also called catalyst scenes. When we return, we'll learn how characters can be the inciting event, too.
Riverview Bank presents the Hauck Foundation Sip and Stroll coming up August 20th, 5 to 8:30 p.m. Route map and goodie bag pickup will be at the Burgerville Center, located at 1602 Main Street in Vancouver, Washington. Proceeds for the event help fund multiple Hauck Elementary School programs that empower kids and families to thrive. That's the Hauck Foundation Sip and Stroll coming up August 20th. For tickets and more information, visit www.haukfoundation.org. That's H-O-U-G-H foundation.org.
Welcome back to Dragonfly, where we are exploring the concept of an inciting event. We have found the inciting event is not always an exciting plot twist or explosive scene, but can be more subtle, even hardly noticed. The inciting event calls our protagonist to the adventure and readies them to make the decision to respond to the call. Some label these catalyst scenes, and sometimes the characters in these moments are catalyst characters. Such is the case in the Harry Potter stories. At the start, we meet Harry Potter and his miserable life. We get hints of Harry's tragic past, symbolized by his unusual scar. We witness unusual magic events, such as Harry speaking to the serpent at the zoo, the flying invitations to the Dursley home, and the lengths the Dursleys go to prevent him from getting them. And then the moment that changes everything.
Excuse me. Who are you?
Rubius Hagrid, keeper of keys and grounds at Hogwarts. Of course, you'll know all about Hogwarts.
Sorry, no.
No? Blimey, Harry, didn't you ever wonder where your mum and dad learned it all?
Learned what?
You're a wizard, Harry.
The inciting event, the catalyst that enables Harry to embark on an entirely new arc in his life, is the call to adventure brought to him by a half-giant on a flying motorcycle, a catalyst character. So we have learned that good stories have characters we care about. They have goals and wants. They face obstacles and enemies that prevent them from reaching their goals. But to get started on their journey, the characters are called to adventure, which sets them on their new path. The inciting event is what gets the story going. In summary, the inciting event is the moment when our main character is called to adventure. It provides the information or action that sets the stage for them to choose to act, and it launches the main conflict, changing their path and starting their journey. The inciting event, whether subtle or thrilling, changes the trajectory of the hero's life and the story forever. There's no going back. That's story time and exploring how stories are created, in this case, the inciting event, also known as the call to adventure. Listeners, when we return, we will hear about the goings-on in that peerless Pacific Northwest community, Cape Couve. You are listening to Dragonfly. This is KXRW 99.9 FM.
The second annual Essence and Vintage Fashion Show is coming up August 14th, 3 to 9 p.m. at The Red on Salmon Street in Portland. They aim to raise awareness, increase community engagement, support local businesses, and highlight our Black and Brown community. There will be 15-plus vendors, a full runway fashion show that includes live entertainment, food and beverages, with an after party at 628 Northeast Broadway. For tickets for the Essence and Vintage Fashion Show, visit Stunner Boutique on their Instagram page at Stunner Boutique. That's at symbol STUNNHER Boutique.
Welcome back to Dragonfly. I'm your host, Rebecca Hoffman. Here's the scoop coming to you straight from the town that has no concept of time. It's not even welcome here. Welcome to Cape Couve. Quiet as usual, Zoltan reached out to pull back the frayed curtains. Pitch black, the street lamps not fixed for, how long is it now, a year, more? He remembered that night. He was fixing tea when he saw a glimpse. Was it real? He turned to the back window and, yes, there it was, the glow of headlights heading down High Street, switchbacking the way down to the main part of town which hugged the shore. Where? He thought, and then realized it was not a lost traveler, but someone clearly making their way to Mrs. Johnson's residence hotel, the Dew Drop Inn. He walked to the front of the manor outside on the widow's walk. There he could see the sea stretching out to meet the stars, dark, soothing, rhythmic. This is his respite, but now a visitor. It's been a while, Zoltan thought at the time. The last few visitors he had successfully run out of town, not in person, just by making it unpleasant. Another one to chase out, he wondered. Or one to finally let stay? Jack Williamson Jr., the builder of the mansion Zoltan is living in now, held a party 50 years ago when Zoltan was a young man, long before he took on the moniker of Zoltan. In those days, he was James. "I intend for you to take over the mayorship, James," James heard his father, Jack Jr., say. His father was an imposing and dictatorial man. They were descendants of the founder of Cape Couve, Jack Williamson, and the Williamsons ruled it like a kingdom. James longed to get away. He had fallen in love with a beautiful woman from a nearby town where he had attended college. Unfortunately, so had his brother, Lauren. Elizabeth had to choose between them. James was always jealous of his younger brother's audacity and derring do. Lauren was a born seafarer and loved the sea life. But he was also ready to interfere in James's life and take the things that James had gathered for himself, since it was so much easier than seeking those things himself. One of those things was Elizabeth. Elizabeth Landry was a beauty, and she knew it. But she wasn't vain. She just carried it well. Knowing her looks opened doors for her. but to top it off, she was also clever and engaging. As it turned out, the Landrys carried unfortunate baggage. Although they had money, there was gossip about the Landry ancestors swindling real estate investors in the area and bilking creditors to make their wealth. Elizabeth's own parents were careful not to mention this dark history and worked hard to appear above it all. When Jack Jr. heard that both his sons were intent on courting Elizabeth, he was furious. There was no way he would tie the Williamsons with the Landrys. No matter to James, who did not care a jot about Cape Cove, he was intent on leaving the place with his beautiful bride and pursue a career in archaeology. Anything as far away from politics and city management as he could get. He loved history and understanding human civilization. "Father," said James, "with all due respect, I am not staying in Cape Cove. I'm not going to have anything to do with running it." Jack Jr. said, "So you may think, James, but this is your destiny. I forbid anything else." From then on, all James could hear was his brother's voice crying out in the wet wind, his crafted sailboat sinking. James heard it and immediately took out their skiff to try and find his brother on the roiling seas, this way, that way, until he finally saw his brother as he succumbed to the waves, holding on to the failed boat. It was his fault, he knew, that his brother had built the boat to impress Elizabeth. He knew Lauren had been hasty in its details because he had told Lauren of his intent to ask for Elizabeth's hand in marriage when she returned home from school that spring. So that became Lauren's intent, too. And now he was gone. But that was then. The accident meant he was drawn back to Cape Cove, reluctantly taking over where his father, Jack Jr., had left off. And surprisingly, using all those tools and insights from his study in archaeology to run this town. Today, he was dealing with this new reporter, Artemis Farrow, who seemed actually competent, and he hoped possibly the answer to his prayers to fend off his nemesis, Charlie Newcomb, the developer who wanted to cancel Cape Cove, raise it, build condos, attract tourists and new landowners, ruin the seascape, and enrich himself. That self-congratulating boor, he had hated him ever since they were in high school together. There on the table lay the week's mail. He pulled out a flashy flyer. The town hall meeting was in only a few minutes to present that self-same developer, Charlie the Bastard Newcomb, so the town could vote on his plans. He knew he had to go. Artemis thought she would be early to the meeting, but as usual, LaDonna and Carol were already there setting up chairs. They ran the local diner and coffee shop, the Rainbow Bistro, and she liked them ever since she met them on her arrival at Cape Cove. She helped with the chairs. "How's the diner?" she asked and immediately bit her tongue. "Bistro," LaDonna and Carol chimed in on cue. Yep, Artemis reminded herself, they were sensitive about the name of the Rainbow Bistro. Others started to file in. Ruthie DeFray from the sweet shop, Pastor Dan and his wife Millicent, Officer Mike, Esme and Asher, who ran the cannabis shop, among them. Artemis was there as the owner and editor and only reporter of her newspaper, the Cape Cove Chronicle. She'd been in town about a year now and was on a first-name basis with nearly everyone there. The event drawing everyone here was the man up front, sashaying his impressive girth by the podium, talking rapidly with the city manager, Mark Zimmer, as Mark pointed out the shop owners and citizens of Cape Cove. She hadn't met the man yet, though not without trying. He was a developer, she knew, and he had big plans for big changes here, plans she wasn't sure everyone would be glad to see. He was apparently known in these parts. His family had lived in Cape Cove in the past, but left some years ago, and not under the best circumstances, and that's where her leads had come to a blank. The plans would need town approval, the town council decided, and so this meeting was called. Mark Zimmer called the meeting to order. Okay, everyone, take your seats. This meeting is to discuss zoning issues in Cape Coob, some development projects, and how they affect all of us. As you all know, it's been a while since someone has come forward with development issues for our town, and it's interesting to us for the money it might bring to the city, which can fund infrastructure, our schools, and other civic projects and responsibilities. This developer is no stranger to Cape Coob, and I know some of you remember him, his wife, and their kids coming up here in our schools. It's an honor to welcome you back, Mr. Newcomb. Let's give a Cape Coob welcome to Charlie Newcomb. From the side door, Zoltan peered into the room. Nearly everyone was there, all the people he had allowed to stay in Cape Coob, all the residents who, with his behind-the-scenes guidance and support, had kept the charming small-town feel at Cape Coob. All the people who never minded the regular removal of the direction signs that led from the freeway to this haven. He quietly slipped in, staying in the back behind one of the posts in the room, his hat pulled low. He watched as Charlie stood up, waving his bejeweled hand at the crowd. All that bling made Zoltan hate him even more. He saw him glad hand the front row, the trickles of sweat sliding down his pink forehead. Could a bluegrass band and some corn dogs make this mawkish scene any more of a cliché, he thought. Charlie made his way back up to the microphone. "Hello, Cape Coob," he started when... Everyone looked up and turned to the door as it flung open. It was Lula Love, the performance artist who had been working to reclaim the old Trinity Theater, which she had renamed Silverlight. "I hear you're thinking about buying up this town, tearing down everything, including my theater." "Your theater?" Charlie gulped. "Just ruining everything in your path, like you always do." Zoltan couldn't believe his good luck. She was doing his work, this flashy dancer, this... Wait a second, he thought, and looked again. It couldn't be. She isn't... "Abigail," Charlie spit out. "Stop right there," said Lula. "There's no Abigail, not anymore. The name's Lula." The crowd looked back and forth between Lula and Charlie. "And you're not going to do any of that. You're going to leave, and there's nothing you can do about it. Now get off that stage, Daddy." Charlie stepped back from the microphone. "Abigail, I mean Lulu, Lula, I thought you were gone, maybe even dead." "I think that's what you wished, isn't it?" said Lula. "After you practically ran me out of town, after you nearly beat my mother to death, not with your fists, but with your voice. You ripped the soul right out of her. That's what killed her, your cruelty." So it was Abigail Newcomb, that garrulous girl his son used to date, Zoltan realized. He'd always liked her spunk, her willingness to confront, though he was a little worried how her flippant behavior influenced his son. Now she's come back, utterly transformed. Lula advanced on Charlie. "I can go on, Charlie, if you'd like." She walked a few steps closer. "Would you like them to know more?" The crowd was unable to look away. "That's why I came back, to keep you from ruining anything else. I'm not letting you win again." Zoltan wanted to keep watching her, too, but instead he took his cue to slip out the side door again. Artemis took notes. "This was the kind of story that sells papers," a little voice in her head whispered. But the sound of the door drew her attention. She got up and made her way to the side door, only to watch as a black Jeep pulled out of the lot and drove away. Thank you. This town is getting more interesting, Artemis thought. She turned to see the meeting breaking up, people leaving. She made her way back in to grab her jacket when she overheard Charlie talking to Mark. She stood behind the door, listening to Charlie. I know it could mean a lot for Cape Coob. You could use a better tax base, fix those potholes and signs, upgrade your police and fire departments, get rid of some of those eyesore buildings. Mark stopped him. Charlie, if you want to purchase this much property, the town has to agree. And after tonight, Charlie stopped him. I can make it very worth your while, Mark, Mr. City Manager. Very. And he plunked down a thick envelope on the podium. I don't want your, Mark protested. I'll call you tomorrow, Mark, he said, as he turned and walked out. Think about it. Artemis drew back as Charlie left. Then she saw Mark reach for the envelope, but instead of taking it, he took the pen that was next to it, pocketed the pen, put on his jacket, and left the building. Artemis watched him leave. Then she walked to the podium herself and took a look inside the envelope. "Hoo boy, Bounder," she said to her absent dog. "It just gets thicker." That's the scoop from Cape Coob, where time isn't even a concept. It's the Cape Coob way. You've been listening to Dragonfly on KXRW 99.9 FM. Thank you for listening to Dragonfly. Special thanks to Audionautics for sound effects and music. To see and hear more about Dragonfly and our guests, as well as what's going on at KXRW and X-Ray FM, join the conversation at kxrwvancouver.org and on Facebook at kxrwvancouver. Community radio like this is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. If you would like to donate, please visit us on the web at www.kxrwvancouver.org and click on the donate button. For all the volunteers and supporters who make community radio possible, I'm Rebecca Hoffman. Thank you for listening. We look forward to seeing you again right here on Dragonfly. Redo on page 4. Quiet as usual. Zoltan reached out to pull back the frayed curtains. Pitch black. The street lamps not fixed for, how long is it now? A year? More? He remembered that night. He was fixing tea when he saw a glimpse. Was it real? He turned to the back window and, yes, there it was. The glow of headlights heading down High Street, switchbacking the way down to the main part of town which hugged the shore. Where? He thought, then realized it was not a lost traveler, but someone clearly making their way to Mrs. Johnson's residence hotel, the Dewdrop Inn. Quiet as usual, Zoltan reached out to pull back the frayed curtains. Pitch black, the street lamps not fixed for, how long is it now? A year, maybe more? He remembered that night. He was fixing tea when he saw a glimpse. Was it real? He turned to the back window, and yes, there it was, the glow of headlights heading down High Street, switchbacking the way down to the main part of town which hugged the shore. Where? He thought, then realized it was not a lost traveler, but someone clearly making their way to Mrs. Johnson's residence hotel, the Dewdrop Inn. That's a scoop from Cape Couve, where time isn't even a concept. It's the Cape Couve way. You've been listening to Dragonfly on KXRW 99.9 FM. Thank you for listening in to Dragonfly. Special thanks to Audionautics for sound effects and music. Please visit us on the web at www.kxrwvancouver.org and click on the donate button. For all of the volunteers and supporters who make community radio possible, I'm Rebecca Hoffman. Thank you for listening. We look forward to seeing you again right here on Dragonfly.